guys, if you're driving about town, listening on 93.3, appreciate you as well. And away we go. Oh, man, I had a perfect game going, and then I screwed it up. Adjusted nicely to it. Just a base hit. Got the double play immediately after. But damn it, man.
You know, the fun part about this show is I'm kind of living in your world when there were tech concerns for remotes. I wanted to go smoothly, but I can't do anything about it one way or the other going smoothly. But you're nailing it. Let me tell you
something funny. I think in a weird way you like that miniature, that 2-second mistake I made, because then you wanted to see how I handled it.
Yep,
which was right. To calmly look over and go, oh, that thing's still up. I forgot to turn that off. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you didn't look at me in the screen, because I was waving. I'm like, hey, nope. We got an echo.
No. I don't need to look at you. I'm problem solving up in here. Right. I got this. I'm like, okay, here's the problem. Got to hit this. Got that. Oh. We're fine. Here we go.
The number one word in this show about what we aspire for and what we want to be about is response. And I just thought the response was excellent. Excellent response, and that's what sets the tone for a successful second hour of a Monday program. Some might say the most important hour all week in the JCS.
For a lot of reasons. First of all, our friends at Zaxby's are all over this, and we know that it's incumbent upon us to make sure that you guys understand the love that Zaxby's has for the Jeff Cameron Show and your taste buds. So go out there today and swing past one of the 74 Zaxby's here in town and get you some of the goodness of golden brown chicken with the Texas toast and the Zax sauce doing it up. All brought to you by our friend Danny, who, of course, has been a Golden Chief booster for over 19 years. And now here he is collaborating with the Jeff Cameron Show. This guy's taste know no bounds. Lover of Florida State, lover of the JCS. You damn Skippy he is. So do him right. Get you a big old platter today on your way home and say, honey, you're not cooking tonight, because that's what your wife does. She cooks, but not tonight. Kidding. Kind of. Get you some platters. They're delicious. Enjoy. Feast on the Zaxby's. All right. So that's why it's important. We start hour two the right way. We already touched on the scrimmage that was. The one thing I do wonder about, I always wonder about it. You hear Mike talk about the offense taking a step forward. Talked about certain players that stood out. He'll talk about the moments, how many plays they run, what the tempo was like, what he liked, what he didn't like, areas of concern, all of that. But he's never going to tell you too much about who got banged up and who didn't. He'll talk about bumps and bruises and things like that, but you really don't know to what extent. And that might mean, and this would not be anything I'd be able to talk about when we go back to practice tomorrow, but, you know, it might be a guy's going to miss the next 2 weeks, maybe miss the rest of spring. It could happen that way. And that would be frustrating, because you're trying to get everybody indoctrinated that needs to be. So we'll see. But it doesn't sound like there was anything catastrophic, because that is one area that I will be complimentary of. If a guy's going to be out for any extended period of time, and he understands that it's maybe a high profile guy, or a guy certainly that the media is going to pick up on, in essence, all he's ever said is, listen, let us get confirmation of what the situation's going to be, and then talk to the family of that individual before I address it. You don't need to race to the sound like an old newspaper guy. You don't have to race to print, but you do need to, he understands that, you know, you go out to a practice and there's a guy missing that they're counting on, you're going to notice it. And if he's still missing 2 and 3 days later, at some point, it's going to get asked. Now, here's the best part. Mike's been the kind of coach that so far, frankly, if I wanted to, or anybody else, not just me, I could walk right over to him right after he's done talking to the assembled press and say, hey, can I ask you something? And bring it up. And he'll tell you where he's at with that and why he's either not talked about it, doesn't want to talk about it, or can't talk about it, or will tomorrow, whatever it might be. Like that, those. That's so you know that. I give you guys that kind of stuff for context. That's more about like, okay, what does this mean when a guy's out? Well, this means he falls in one of these categories, and this is Mike's rule on that. And I happen to agree with the rule, so I don't break it, because it doesn't seem silly. Some coaches have silly rules that I'll push back on, and Mike doesn't really have any of those. He really doesn't. It's refreshing.
That's reasonable expectations. And the thing is that the access to the practice is what, you know, drives our passion, because we get to see and tell you about Jalen Lucas before we see a clip in social media. Think about it if it was the other way and you had something like Jimbo's policy or Willie's policy, which is minimal. If you see a clip of Jalen Lucas coming out of the scrimmage, you're like, yeah, so what? That dude's like the fourth or fifth best running back. Okay, whatever. But because we have access to a handful of practices before scrimmage number two, and we get to see what Jalen Lucas is in the settings of scrimmage plays, he's a Swiss Army knife of a weapon. When you see the clip, you say, oh, yeah, that's the guy we're talking about, everybody. That's the dude that you want to watch. And that's the context that we can bring. And so, you know, we've long been champions of Mike's way of seeing the world because we see it the same way, too. But you're right. The standard isn't too crazy. It's just that when the scrimmages happen, we have to mine for information, verification, those types of things. But by all accounts, whether on the record like Coach Norvell or off, better day for the offense, which is really good to hear. Best day of camp for DJU, which is great to hear because you need somebody to stabilize that situation. DJU was always going to be the starter, but it's nice for the roster to see that. And everybody goes, okay, that's why he's our starting quarterback.
You know, I still can't. I think that's an area that I struggle with a little bit. And in some ways, it doesn't make any sense. I'm inconsistent in my line of reasoning. And you know me, I like to define terms. And when we have these conversations, and I can hear myself being contradictory sometimes on some of these things. And this is what I mean. You know, DJ, I think, will have his best year as a quarterback. I don't know how he couldn't. He's played a lot of college football now. He's been in a lot of systems. And Mike's a really good offensive coach. I think Mike deals with quarterbacks well. So I think that all leads to him having his best year. But what that looks like is harder to predict because he has some shortcomings in his game, or at least he did at Clemson, and he did at Oregon State. There's more to like than not. I'm not trying to paint a picture of a guy who's bad. I just think he has to get better. He has to be a little bit more consistent, especially in those easy intermediate throws that he misses too much of. And I got to imagine that he will do that. But that's kind of the question mark I have. I'm glad to hear Mike talk about him taking more ownership and looking better. Not that he's been bad. He's a guy who looks like a guy who's learning a new system. He has a good day, then he has a bad day, then he has a really good day, and then he makes some throws that make you go, oh, my goodness gracious, that is a lot of talent in that arm. And other times you're like, God, I can't miss that one. He's wide open. And yet I'm the guy telling you that I think our offense is going to be more productive. And I think that our receiving core is deeper. And then I think our running back room is versatile and deep. And that I think all these, and it's weird because they kind of compete with one another. It's not the same as, you know, competing points of view can be true. It's just, it's a weird, interesting dynamic. I do think, when people ask what concern do I have, I have to get down in the weeds with some of this stuff because I am concerned about our tight end's ability to block, and that's plural. And then I guess I would say I'm a little concerned that, you know, DJ could be inconsistent. But I don't – other than that, I think the offensive line's going to be better, and there are options. You knock on wood, nobody else gets banged up the way that Destin Hill did. If it's status quo going into the fall with what we have right now, I feel all right. I feel very, very good about things. I can't wait to watch the spring game. Oddly enough, spring games, a lot of times I'm not a huge fan of. I love the event. I love, you know, I've had great opportunities in my career in the spring game, whether it be being on the sidelines and calling plays and having fun that way, or interviewing coaches beforehand. I've done play-by-play for spring games from up in the booth before. I've done a lot of things with them, but typically I don't like them because they aren't games, and a lot of times it's not a really good representation of how any one segment's going to play. Coaches will try to divvy it up in weird ways, and it just doesn't produce the kind of information I'm looking for. I love gathering with friends and family. I love tailgating. Usually it's a beautiful afternoon inside a Doak and all those things. But, you know, you don't get the information that you need. But this year I'm really looking forward to the spring game because of all the new faces and because of the new quarterback.
Spring games are more entertaining when you have a roster with depth. If you don't have a roster with depth, they're not very entertaining because most of the time coaches want to put bubble wrap on that certain position group and say, well, I know what I got. It's a showcase. Maybe for freshmen. So you get the freshman showcase, but not.
Yeah, you'll find speed. Players. You'll see a guy where you're like, oh, that guy is unbelievable. Or, hey, man, can you believe so-and-so is that big or whatever? But that's about it.
But depth and competition actually makes the spring showcase mean something. It's critical. It's critical in the evaluation process of where you are in the two deep, and that's what we're going to get. I'm excited for it too. If you are bullish, I think this is 1-to-1. Tell me if you agree with this, but I think it's 1-to-1. If you are bullish on this offense and its ability to be productive relative to last year, it's because you're saying you think they can establish the run with consistency the way that they want to. Because at that point, DJ could be inconsistent with throws, but they're going to be there and they're going to be open because play action is a thing, because the speed is there down the field. That one false step with that cannon for an arm, you could make up for a missed throw on 2nd and 10 that should have put you at 3rd and 2, but you missed the throw. Well, if you've got 75 yards in this arm and you can chuck it down the field and Jalen Lucas is wide open or Malik Benson's wide open, that erases mistakes. So that's like one part of it. But the other is, if they can establish the run with consistency, that would lead to optimism about what this offense can be.
Yeah, and I think they will, because I think it made Mike angry that they couldn't do that last year. You know, I don't want to put words in coach's mouth. Like, he just got done last hour describing how it is that Mike chooses his, you know, words carefully when talking about a player or set of circumstances. And so I don't like to insert words there, but I am paid to give an opinion. And I do have the opinion that I think they were a little frustrated at times last year with Trey. My opinion is that I think he could, for all of the dynamic ability and the wow factor that Trey Benson possessed at that size to run that speed is insane. For all of that, I do think that he didn't always see it, Tom. He just didn't always see it. And we forget about that a little bit because of the speed and the playmaking ability, because of the explosiveness. And like, there's a play a game where you go, oh my goodness, very few people could do that. But the down to down consistency was not there last year. That's not all on Trey Benson, but some of it was. Some of it was on the times in which Jordan made the wrong decision. Some of it was the offensive line, and some of it was Trey, who just didn't see it or had too much patience and couldn't find the right balance between hitting the hole and waiting for something to develop.
It's very difficult to break down specifically why the running game didn't do as well. Like, unless you're a coach or a scout, then you can speak to it specifically. But some of the numbers I saw to help reach a conclusion was, again, when it was about getting to the line of scrimmage or past the line of scrimmage, we were actually the exact same as we were the year prior. It was, looked like from the guard's perspective or the tight ends, they didn't get downfield and they weren't better at blocking down the field. Some of that might be because a defense is ready for counter, and so they're taking different angles. Some of it might be that you miss Dylan Gibbons, and some of it might be that, you know, you miss the tight end room that you had maybe the year before. Maybe it was they had a couple guys that they could count on when they really needed to execute GT counter, that they could do that, or GY counter, that they could really do that. I think some of it also with Trey, they wanted his eyes to be in different places. David Johnson said it last year that he left hundreds of yards on the field with basic reads, basic ideas of getting downhill and trusting your speed. The Clemson game in 2022 was one example where he found a way to run himself into the ground when he could have scored a touchdown, an explosive play of an extra 20, 30 yards, and he found a way to come be tackled and be brought to the ground. I think part of it was he was swimming. He was trying to think his way through what they were, the adjustments they wanted him to make, and he wasn't as natural. So while I agree with you that, you know, it's all equal parts, with Trey, I think some of that was they tried to make him something that he was not, from a vision standpoint. And we missed Trayshawn Ward. Trayshawn had the timing down like that. And the good thing is, Coach Norvell said this on Saturday, that Lawrence Toafili looks just as explosive as he did last year with the added weight, that he's better than he was last fall with the added weight. And that dude has a really good sense of timing and what is necessary. So you're talking about like an insurance policy. Maybe Roy Dell is better. Maybe Cam Davis is ready for prime time early and Jalen Lucas is explosive. But it's really nice to have Lawrence Toafili in this scheme, somebody who knows the feel for it inside and out.
Lawrence is a guy that easily gets overlooked sometimes. I think it's because of the dynamic aspects I was alluding to Trey Benson and other backs that have been here, and how he's more of a kind of a home run hitter, not a down-to-down back, He can catch the ball. He can do a lot of things, kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of a player. Early in his career, he was smallish, and so that's the initial imprint people had of him was that he was going to struggle between the tackles. He's gotten better at that. I admit I'm guilty of overlooking him because if you ask me about the running back room, he's not the kid that I bring up right away. He's probably not – well, I know he's not the second kid I bring up, and he's not the third kid I bring up. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a role. It doesn't mean he's not important. It doesn't mean he's not going to contribute in a good way with us. It doesn't mean that he's not all of the things that we just described him as. It just means that, like, I'm much more excited by the down-to-down Roy Dell, the idea of Cam. So looking at that body type is unbelievable. He's huge. Then you talk about a Jalen Lucas, who's not really a true running back in the sense that he's kind of, to me, he'll be more of a gadget guy and a special teams guy, but a guy that they're going to utilize. But he has a weapon that nobody else has. So everybody has this unique thing that excites me more than Lawrence Toafili, and it's unfair to him to some extent. But I, you know, you're right. When we bring up that room, I don't bring his name up. It's weird. I've been guilty of bringing up Keziah Holmes more than I bring him up.
Yeah, and Coach said in his presser that he's been limited, Lawrence has, but he made his presence felt early in the scrimmage. So, again, he's willing to give you a little nugget there of context that there's been some limitations on Lawrence. But that somebody who is the MVP of the ACC championship game, he's even better than he was then, which you can look at that a couple of ways. There could be a bump and a bruise that they're trying to protect, or they like where they have in him enough that they know. So we'll just let him do what he needs to do, and then let's evaluate what else we have and how to make this whole thing work. The great news is whatever our running game looks like, you're going to have at the top of the line a player that does one thing really, really well: speed, short yardage, Swiss Army variety, block, pass protection. You've got catching out of the backfield. You've got an answer for every little thing that you want out of the position in a way that you did not last year.
By the way, friends, Social Kitchen has Masters packages for sale right now. It's Masters week. I, for one, am pumped. People can purchase these Masters packages at socialkitchentlh.com. You can also just swing on by there off of Cary Forest. I know I do. And they'll help you order through their website. So this is a big deal. Like, you can pick this up, you know, this week and Thursday through Saturday. You can go check it out for yourself if you're in the area off of Cary Forest, because I think you'll be pleased that you did. You'll see the selection of meats second to none. You also get a chance to talk to the chef there. At the same time, if you just wanted to order it, SocialKitchenTLH.com is where you would want to go. All right, Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. We'll continue in just a moment. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Jeff Cameron Show. Appreciate you, you podcasters, you. We also appreciate our friends at Zaxby's. You hear me say that a lot. I need to say it a new way today so you're not hearing the same thing over and over and over again. Zaxby's is delicious. Danny does a great job, and he's been a Golden Chief booster at Florida State for over 19 years now. He cares a lot. He invests in Florida State. He invests in the Jeff Cameron Show. That means you should race out to Zaxby's right now and get a salad, Tom. A salad.
The salad, the fingers, the platters, it's all good stuff. And this is the part of the year where in Tallahassee the weather is so nice. A lot
Texas
of outdoor
toast.
Settings.
Just thought I'd say it.
And you got it before I could.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the time of year where in town you want to go outside, go to Cascades, go to the ballpark.
Get the platters, baby.
Get outdoors and just bring some food. So when you do go to potluck, an outdoor potluck, don't waste time in the oven or on the, what they call it, a range. Don't do that. Don't
no.
be cooking.
No.
Go to Zaxby's. They're all over the place. Get the platter. Get the Texas toast.
Get the spicy Zax sauce.
And you can get some sweet tea while you're at it, too. Bring the tea for the people.
Forget about it. Good stuff. Zaxby's. We appreciate you, Zaxby's. As I do want to make mention of our friends at Tried and True Consulting, came on board just a couple weeks ago. People getting good results there. Tried and True Consulting is a payments and business solutions company owned by fellow Knowles. As a Knowles business owner, they're committed to reducing costs and increasing your bottom line. They also give back 10% of their net revenue to the Battles Inn. That's good stuff. Hit the trifecta today. You could scan that QR code that you'll see during breaks. We have it up for you. It's pretty prominent. There you go. If you're looking in the chat right there, scan that. Find out more about what I'm talking about. Or you can call alums, Don and Joe, 844-464-6653. So there you go. Tried and True Consulting. Good folks. I like working with them, and they do good work. And I got a question in the chat that was Marvin Jones Jr. still living up to the hype? Yeah, yeah, no, he is. We talked about that some last hour. Appreciate that, Trey. He's looked even better. I think there was some apprehension there coming into spring camp, just a kind of a mystery as to who he was, what he was. I mean, we know obviously the name, and I had high hopes that he would be something special, but I wasn't sure that he would immediately stand out, and he has immediately stood out. So, and the coaches referenced him as well. So it's not as if it's just us. It's Coach Norvell and others speaking about what he's bringing to the table. That group is going to be good. The defensive ends. I'm interested to see the areas where I have legitimate concerns about, you know, like, okay, I'll give you a good example. Last year, you know, that I talked at length, probably ad nauseum in the case for some of you, about the inconsistencies and frustrations I had, certain aspects of linebacker play. That turned out to be better than I thought it was going to be, largely because the two most consistent and valuable members of that linebacking core stayed healthy for the most part. Now, late in the year, like everybody else, they were dealing with some things. But, you know, but Tatum Bethune was healthy. He got healthy, and he actually got more healthy by week 3, 4, 5, and 6. He started playing even more consistent, although he made such a big splash in the LSU game. Kalen DeLoach, you know, that speed returned. Remember, Tom, how it was kind of gone at the end of the previous year? We were like, what happened to this guy's speed? It's gone. Well, we found out he was dealing with some things, and he came back in, and he got faster. So they're just – my concerns were that they weren't great in coverage, and there wasn't a lot of depth. And Lundy was limited because he was just a run stopper, and I think he's still pretty much that. But we'll see. I have less concerns at linebacker now. Just because I'm really pleased with the steps that Cryer is taking. I really think he's been very good in this camp. And I'm going to trust Adam Fuller. And there's something I didn't know that we would all kind of maybe agree to do. But Adam Fuller kind of gets the benefit of the doubt right now. You know, he's telling us that he's seen real signs that Nicholson's come a long way and that he thinks he's on the precipice of something really good. He hasn't looked bad in camp. I don't see any indicators that he's taking a step back. I, however, have not seen the indicators that he's taking a huge step. But I'm not the defensive coordinator, and I don't see every second of every day, and I don't see these scrimmages. So, you know, again, I'm going to trust him that that's happening. He's always been good in coverage. So for him to say that Nicholson is taking a big step forward means that he's doing well against the run when we're not around, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing where, you know, Coach Fuller, he can be blunt in a refreshing way as a member of the media, because, you know, he's not saying, boy, oh boy, we really love Blake. You know, he can cover. Yeah, boy, if anybody on this roster, Blake can cover. Right. What a player. He'll say, yeah, you remember last year he was good at coverage, but now he's good at the other stuff. Like, he's willing right. to give you that. He's like, yeah, I understand that maybe if we're looking for him to be a better player, we need something different to be present to have him get on the field. And he was talking about the physicality of inside run drill. He was talking about the physicality in the scrimmage. He was talking about keys, getting downhill, instincts, all the things that come with specialized play at the collegiate level, because Blake played a ton of positions in high school. But now you're going to specialize, and you've got to know to the point where your instincts can take over and your athleticism can take over. College football is too fast. If you're thinking, especially at linebacker, it looks awful. And we had backups last year who were clearly thinking their way through certain situations, and it was apparent. Same thing with Kevin Knowles last year, and he was dealing with an injury himself, but you could tell that there was this extra tick, and that's all it takes, where you're thinking and you're trying, and somebody's just going to run right by you, or they're going to make you look foolish. Linebacker is one of the most lonely places or positions in the world, especially on defense, where if you make the wrong read, everybody knows it, and everybody can plainly see it. Hopefully they do cultivate more options, but you're right. Adam Fuller is there are some kids that they want to protect. They don't want to give them praise, and they don't want to raise criticisms because they worry about the kid's mental comportment. They must like it a lot if he's willing to give open praise after just a couple of weeks of spring of how Blake Nicholson's come along. That's a great sign for us.
We got a question in the chat, the Heisen Lincoln Law Firm chat, which was, you know, basically, if you've got to hit something in the portal, what are you going to go hit? You know, I've got ideas that I think some of it's a fluid situation. We know that. Like, I don't know that a year ago they necessarily thought they were going to go grab a receiver after, you know, as late as they did. Think about when they grabbed him. But an opportunity arose, and Keon Coleman all of a sudden was available, and all you needed to do was look at tape and see what he was able to do with a ass-sorry quarterback at Michigan State. So you had an ass-sorry team with an ass-sorry quarterback, and he had all that production. So you're like, well, man, imagine if we put him with a guy that can actually play. And so they decided, screw it, let's go get him. And it was the right thing. Unfortunately, he got hurt pretty much halfway through the season, and we didn't get a true Keon Coleman season, in my opinion. He's still good enough. He still made a lot of plays, still did some things that made you wow. And gosh, when he was especially healthy early, remember hurdling guys on the sideline and just like unbelievable. We forget the highlight plays. I mean, we remember all the touchdowns against LSU, but there were all these wonderful moments where he ran away from people, jumped over people. He was able to out-duel people in congested areas of the field for the football. He won the game against Clemson on the contested catch, right, when they had the opportunity to take advantage of the kid who had been subbed in for injury. Like, all those things are big deals. And so I'm not saying he was worthless, but he was a half of what he was at the start of the season by the end of the season. And it's a shame. And that frustrated me to no end. And so they went and got that guy, and he made a big difference. But they had not planned on that. So I don't know. There'll probably be two or three guys that may become available that a lot of people will want that we can't predict right now. And you're going to go, well, you know, I don't think they had any desire to go out and get another offensive lineman, but this dude just came in the portal and is available, and he started 3 years at Michigan. We should maybe take a look at it, you know, that kind of a thing. So there's that. Always keep that in mind. I think right now, though, barring situations where there is an obvious, you know, like, how could you pass up on this guy? Why? How could you not go grab Keon Coleman, right? Barring that, just those guys sitting in a room and saying, all right, look, man, we've seen it. We like this. A little concerned here. I think this will be fine. We don't need to do anything. I think this is fine. Now, they're factoring in a lot of things. They're factoring in ability. They're factoring in depth. They're factoring in scheme. They're factoring the fragility or not of the makeup of a room. I mean, well, they have to, yeah, right?
And how about eligibility? It's not, is it a one-year guy or a multi-year guy? Like, so for example, I was going to make a joke that said, we're not going after a defensive end. I think we're fine there. But maybe you grab one if he's got 3 years of eligibility left. And right, so on its right. face, you read the headline and you say, a defensive end? Why? But you see that he's a redshirt sophomore. And so you bring him into the fold. That's another part of the math here is, do we really need a one-and-done type player to help us get over the top at X position or Y position? If we've only got a certain amount of slots, I don't want to pass up on this guy. He's best player available. Now, he won't play a ton this year, but, man, he sets us up for success in 2025 and 2026.
I will predict, and most of the time people want to hear, like, okay, what are your thoughts? What do you think they will do? I think it's highly likely they'll go out and get another defensive tackle. I think it's at least one. I think just for depth purposes, we know that you have to win games in the trenches and you have to have beef there and you have to be able to rotate. It's a vicious, vicious trade being in the trenches. I think they'll go get one more. I think they'd be open to the idea of if he's available, if there's an experienced, proven, having done it in games at a high-level Power 5 type thing, I think, Tom, they would go grab a tight end or a wide receiver, if not both. I think they would. With the injury to Destin Hill, I think they were counting on him to play a lot of snaps. I think they recognized that he was taking a big step forward. I think that if he's – and we don't know yet because Mike hasn't talked about the extent, I'm going to make – an assumption here that he's extremely limited, if not completely unavailable for the fall. If that's the case, then I think that you might do yourself good in going out and getting a game proven receiver. If he's not there, then you're going to rely on what you have in camp. But you have more than enough talent, more than enough bodies, just maybe some inexperience concerns at that position right now. Well, yeah. Hey, is Fortier healthy at the end of this camp, feeling good about himself? Has Akeem taken the next step? Is Benson the guy that you thought he was going to be? Is Brown coming into form now as a guy that might take Destin Hill's reps now that Destin's down? If all that's operating to peak efficiency, maybe you don't go out and get him, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't want to fall into the same trap as last year where I thought because Kentron owned the spring, Kentron was fantastic in spring. and Johnny was Johnny. So you feel very good about where you're starting the conversation with those two players. And Destin, what could he be? What else out of this group can you get for a 4 and a 5 in this receiver core? I thought that was enough. But they said, no, it's not. Keon Coleman makes us better. So we're going to go get Keon Coleman. Kentron had an excellent spring. We're very proud of the spring that he had. But we're going to put him on line 2 of the depth chart, and we're going to put Keon Coleman on line 1 of the depth chart, and that's all well and good. Prove it again, Kentron. And then obviously there were health concerns after that. So I don't want to fall into that trap again, but this time around, I think the export market will have something to do with their approach at receiver.
Correct.
How aggressive they are. How many dudes leave? How many dudes 3 weeks from now have entered their name into the transfer portal and say, I might play at Florida State, but I know I'm going to play here for a fact because they're telling me I'm going to, and I've only got 1 year to go or 2 years to go. So I think that would inform the receiver market. Tight end, I could see it. Defensive tackle, 100%. They don't need it right now if everybody stays healthy. That's not the case of defensive tackle. You can never assume that.
No, I'm gonna go out and get somebody. I think I think without question I'd go out and get somebody if it's available. And I got a guy that started somewhere like the Big Ten, or the old Pac-12 or the Big 12, any of these Power Five places. Not obviously they had so much success with Braden Fisk. You don't have to be out of a Power Five, but Braden was kind of a unique set of circumstances. You know, A, he was coming off an injury, and B, when you looked at the teams that were like really vying for his services, you're talking about big time programs. Notre Dame was our chief competition for Braden Fisk. So you knew that a lot of people looked at that tape and said, that is a Power Five dude. That is quickness. That is size. That is intensity. That is all the things I want. He kind of felt like a plug and play guy coming from a smaller school. Other guys, when you look at the past and you look at a guy like Keir Thomas coming in from South Carolina, who really improved his stock and elevated where he was, you loved his body type. You knew that he had been in the wars in the SEC, so you felt good about that transition because there was evidence of that. There's just different ways that you view guys. If there's a Power Five guy out there that's had success and been consistent and he's available at the end of this spring, I'd go grab him. I'm not saying I wouldn't do that at linebacker as well.
Fair. I threw that in the end there. I see it. I feel the about Lolo Hea the way I felt about Keir Thomas. They're not the same body type. They're not the exact same
solid,
player.
Won't be flashy, can trust him, is impacting the game more than people will realize because it's all kind of understated in terms of stats.
Yes. In terms of impact, I feel very similarly. You know what you're getting. And if you want to do the floor ceiling thing, high floor player. High floor stabilizes that group. I think there's a fun debate to be had here in the near future about it's 3rd and 2. What do you do at edge? You got 4 down linemen, 2 edge out there. Who are your 2 guys? Because I think Sione has to be one of those players out there in that situation. But Peyton's
Patrick Peyton off the field these days. So tell me you're pulling Marvin.
This is the hard part. And then you could also make an argument that if it's 3rd and 2 and it's a run first team, that maybe Durajaye is out there and maybe he's playing edge because you need it's a fun conversation to be had. And the fun part about it too is Kier is like Sione. Can Marvin be like Jermaine? Because Jermaine was not proven at that level when he got here. Marvin's getting a lot of run, a lot of people talking about Marvin. And that's great to hear because I saw a little bit of it in my one day. But when you hear the coaches saying that, again, it's important. They're choosing their words very carefully.
Marvin, listen, nobody wowed me in person the first chance I had to talk to and stand next to, like Jermaine Johnson did. Jermaine wowed me in a way that I was just like, look at this guy. This is a specimen. This is a guy that if he plays anything like he looks, we've got us a stud. And it turned out that way. Maybe Marvin does. And that would be absolutely huge. Chef Cameron Show 93.3, Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Continue in a moment. Hey, Seminoles, we all know how important it is to score in the red zone, but are you prepared for success in the retirement red zone? 5 years leading up to your retirement date and the immediate 5 years after are a critical time of thoughtful planning for you and your family. And our friend and fellow Knoll, Adam Tolliver, and his team at Artisan Financial Strategies are prepared to coach you to victory. Some of us, well, we're at midfield and want to plan ahead. Others are ready to punch it in on the goal line. Whether making sure you know how much you can spend without running out of money, protecting yourself and your family against rising healthcare costs, or carefully planning your legacy, The Artisan team brings a combined 30-plus years of planning experience and world-class resources to help you navigate the way. For more information, just head over to KnollRetirement.com. Now, that's one word, KnollRetirement.com. Pinch a Penny Pools and Spas have everything you need for pool maintenance, chemicals, cleaners, pumps, vacuums, nets, covers, you name it, they got it. Here's the deal. I'm going to skip all of it. I'm going to let you know. If you got an old tub, beat up, needs to be replaced, tired of looking at it, you know you don't have the wherewithal to get rid of the said tub, you don't have the means, you don't have the know-how, you don't have the transportation, then our friends at Pinch a Penny will come pick it up. They'll replace it with a new tub for you. They'll give you a rebate on said tub because of the value of your old tub. There you go. They make it easy for you. They'll haul it away. Pinch a Penny Pools and Spas, if you're ready to relax, then they're ready to show you how. Pinch a Penny Pools and Spas, you can find them off of Greer Street. And there he is. Ah, I just looked up and saw the otter. You know what changes today, too, is unfortunately probables kind of gets... maybe not the axe, but it's a little bit different. We're going to have it ready for you from here on out. Tom and I will probably set it to music in the mornings. Probably will stay the same. They did pretty much stay the same. So we'll have to do that moving forward now. So this is a hodgepodge deal where Director Matthew will be here sometimes. I will be here sometimes. One day a week, it might be a pre-record from the house. It's just a lot of things, man. It's the way we had to do it. Some things were changing, and that's the way it works. So, but you'll get me. I'm right here. I'm right here, and I'm doing this, and Tom will be right here. So we're going to be all right.
Well, and on Wednesday and Thursday, we're in studio.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, old school there. I can just let my hair down.
That's right. Let your hair down. Let me worry about the doohickeys. I'll be worried about
all the buttons and all the filing and all that. I'll just go in there and be me and do a show. I'll probably be bragging about the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are now 8-2. And, you know, we didn't have a chance to have Irish FL on the program today because I had too many things to worry about. I had all this. But here's the good news. I'm going to be with him tonight at 7 o'clock for the Monday Smash. Old school, original lineup. The OGs, Jeff and Ira, get together tonight for the Monday Smash, 7 o'clock on War Chant TV. And thank our friends State Farm, Russ Voorhees, stepping in there.
He also sponsored some of the tournament this year as well. He was a high-level sponsor, State Farm agent Russ Voorhees.
That's who the hell Russ is, by the way. He's dedicated, loyal, smart, hardworking, kind of guy you want to reach out and call.
He will be sponsoring an element that day on Friday, the long drive, which I think is apropos. Russ is a large dude. If he was closest to the pin or the putting contest, man, Russ is about the long drive. So that'll be on hole number seven Friday.
Guy looks like a starting right tackle in the NFL.
He does.
He's a monster. But he's just a kind-hearted monster. Listening to us over in Jacksonville right now, I'm sure of it. Did you glance out the window and see the eclipse there, Tom? Are you looking at it? You seeing how this is playing out? I know everybody's excited about the eclipse.
So it's going for a while. I had a couple of people in their backyards wandering around like, it looks foolish out of context. What are you doing? Sipping on some strong beverages for 2:30.
Oh, they made a holiday out of it.
I think they made an eclipse holiday out of it. It got very gloomy here. I haven't done the whole put the glasses on and look out there yet. I know that I missed the peak, but it's still going for another 45 minutes to an hour, right? So I think I
haven't. I'm in this dark studio. I haven't had a chance to kind of do it yet. I'll leave here in a little while and I'll go out there and I'll see what I need to see. But I got to be honest with you, even though I understand the magnitude of such things and you can read into it and go, oh, this is amazing. And didn't do anything. I don't care.
It was cool. The one that was at the old.
I remember everybody got so excited. Like, oh, it's going to be amazing. This is unlike any other that we've had before. They say it every time. This will never happen again. The earth won't be here the next time this happens. They're like, okay. You told me that when I was in third grade and in seventh and when I was 16 and again later.
We had the one in the last 10 years that was at the old ESPN studios. And the way it was really cool because the way that the light went through the bushes onto the concrete surface, you saw that it had basically the reflection.
Remember the flickering, the reflections, those were cool.
Like many eclipses themselves, like little evidence of that. That was fun. I'm sure this one is like that.
for about 30 seconds.
Yeah. You're like, oh.
You went, oh, that's neat. All right.
Yeah.
What you guys doing for dinner?
Man, I don't need another giant earth event. We just had an earthquake on Friday. I don't need anything more. Earthquakes, eclipses. I get it. We're small. We don't matter. None of this matters at all. Right. I get it.
But how are the gnolls going to do in Ireland, damn it?
That's what matters.
I haven't spoken a word of Purdue-UConn yet because I have made the assumption that UConn is going to stomp Purdue in the same way that they've stomped everybody else's ass. And I've watched all along. I've enjoyed, you know, watching the tournament, but I just, it's only 6.5. I'm laying the 6.5. I hope that, you know, somehow Edie makes it close. Somehow it's interesting. But don't you get a sense that this is kind of a foregone conclusion?
Probably. Yeah. UConn is a juggernaut. It feels like the Nova team from not that long ago where everybody was playing for second. For me, I've been a bit of a broken record on this. But the home stretch in the wild card position 2 in the Eastern playoffs for the NHL is riveting stuff. It's changing by the minute. Pittsburgh has come out of nowhere. The Islanders came from the cellar, and now they're in a position to make the playoffs. It's crazy what's going on in hockey, and then baseball has just been fantastic. Whether it's Knowles baseball or professional baseball, I'm loving baseball so much that yesterday, as I'm watching the Knowles on one screen and the Mets on another, I did pull up the 9th inning of a 2-1 ball game in Pittsburgh just to see how it would end, and I saw something that made you very happy, which was a 2-run bottom of the 9th, so Pittsburgh wins the series over Baltimore. And they just keep on rolling.
Won the series in the same way they've won every series they've played this year. And it's been exciting, riveting. The series that we had with Baltimore was awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Ira and I texted each other back and forth. We're going to try to get together. But I didn't get a chance this weekend. I was off doing some things. Went to St. Mark's, by the way. Had a good time. It was all good. The fourth there is amazing. But I watched and I saw the games. And, yeah, I mean, I get it. We're not going to win every extra inning game we play. But we have so far this year. All of them, which is nice. And so I can celebrate as I did a little bit last year in the early going. We'll see if anything else happens. It was also fun yesterday to watch the University of Florida lose a 2-run lead in the 9th and get walked off on and swept, just like it was fun to watch Duke sweep Miami. I do think that Duke baseball team is very, very good, by the way, as we continue to assess where Florida State's at. Tomorrow is the game against Florida, and they'll be hopping mad. They're going to be an angry bunch. And I suspect trying to avoid a sweep in the season series, you'll get an intensely focused group. But you know what? We're really good, and we responded in this series. And that atmosphere at Hauser tomorrow is going to be akin to some of the great atmospheres we ever had over there. I do think this team has been embraced and beloved, and people have this eagerness and willingness to go back out to the ballpark because it's like the olden days, man.
It is. Well, for a lot of reasons. Like for me, Thursday, we're covering practice. And then as soon as practice is over, walking up the stairs to Hauser, and I'll sit in the press box for a little bit, do some work, and watch our team play Miami. That's a nice 1-2 punch for a Thursday afternoon. Plus, you're going to have Masters highlights on while all that's going too. Like this is setting up to be quite the sports week. But I think you can do it. You can put mission accomplished banners on battleships and stand in front of them and take photos. Baseball is fixed. Like it wasn't that long ago that you were as diehard as you ever were about baseball, and I was waffling. The games took too long. It's 2-1. How does a 2-1 ball game go 3 hours and 45 minutes? Like it's just there's nothing happening. I'm okay with a pitcher's duel if it happens in 2 hours 45 minutes. That's the way it's supposed to go. But professional baseball is fixed. I'm tuning into more games that mean nothing to me than I have since I was a kid in terms of my own team. College baseball is fixed. It still takes forever because we'll club 15 runs out there. That's what the Florida State does, and there's a ton more pitching changes, but it's way faster. It resembles the professional game way more than it ever has. Baseball in general is just in such a better place, and it's so much more watchable. And this week at Hauser, we get 12 out of 10 energy games.
Yo, huge, huge energy games. And I'm going to say that I think – that baseball is the sport that when I talk about some of my favorite days in the early 90s at FSU, it's being over there at Hauser and then watching those teams. But the product itself was fading fast and becoming problematic. At the same time, the program was beginning to dip. And so the confluence of those things made it so that you watch the crowds dwindle. And I don't like to be the guy that is like, oh, things were so much better back when, but they were so much better back when, and you could sense it and feel it. And you really wondered what the path out was, especially since you'd gotten passed over by a program, you know, 2 hours from you, and it made you sick to your stomach, and you watched it play out in the manner that it did. But listen, you're right to say it. I think it is fixed. I think Link Jarrett, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not trying to tell you they're going to win the College World Series this year. They might. I did place a bet on them to go to the College World Series this year before the season started.
To be clear, I was talking about the sport in general, but yes, Link, no, Link may have fixed it. I think he did.
Yeah, I think he did. And look, now what happens, just like with Mike Norvell, what happens in a situation like this is that you end up changing the way you're viewed by the most important people, which is, of course, the players that want to come play for you. And so the influx of immense talent out of the high school ranks as well as transfer market is something that is a very real thing. We're out of here. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Be good, everybody. Peace.
I'm Greg Tisch here to share one.